Clayton. Sean Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light, Washington's most refreshing beer.
Now, here's a six-pack of questions.
All right, Professor, you called it. Jason Myers coming back to the Seahawks.
Yeah, but that was easy to figure out. It was funny because about 15 minutes before my show started at 10, I saw that it was tweeted out to Jason Myers going in and saying goodbye. And I said, oh, this makes a fit. And so I thought, I bet he comes to Seattle. And sure enough, he did. And right at the numbers that Cody Doink Doink got last year as the highest paid kicker in free agency, he gets 4 years at $15.5 million, $3.75 a year. And I think it's a good deal. They lock him up for 4 years. They give him $7 million guaranteed. And I know last year, as much as I think we all love Sebastian Janikowski, because of this history that he's had, what a great guy he is to talk to. But in the end, I thought Jason Myers outkicked him in training camp, and now he gets to come back and stay with the team for 4 years.
Clayton, what were you doing watching the kickers anyway? What's the matter with you?
Well, somebody has to.
All right.
Well, let's put it this way. If you didn't watch that, then you're stuck with Blair Walsh.
Yeah, you couldn't be stuck with Blair Walsh. John, the other guy, Michael Kendricks, has re-signed with the Seahawks. It's a $4 million deal is what the terms have been reported as. Do you think he's going to be available for throughout the entire season? That's really the question with him.
No idea. Me not being a guy that knows anything about law, I mean, know enough about law to go into a case like that, I think the fact that they did do something, I think, gives an indication that they think there's a chance that they can get him back. And I think it's good to show that he showed the loyalty of being able to stay. I think the fact that they paid him $4 million pretty much gives you the answer on KJ Wright, that KJ's not going to be back. And so he could be the seventh Seahawk to leave. But you know, Kendricks, when he played well. I mean, he's smart, he can cover well. It's just a matter of trying to get through the legal issues right now, and if he can do that, then they're covered at the weak side linebacker spot.
Yeah, I really liked watching that guy play, and it was, you know, he would just show up and play.
Yeah,
it's not like it took him a while to get going. John, what are some of your favorite Earl Thomas moments? Maybe you can think about it throughout. We're having people text in. Mm-hmm. You know, somebody sort of hinted that, you know, how Richard Sherman has the tip statue, that
right.
Maybe Earl's would be him on a stretcher flipping off it would the be sidelines.
The tip or, and the flip.
The chip and the flip,
oh,
yeah.
Nice.
I think that works out pretty well.
Yeah. No, but, you know, there were some – and I thought, look, after 2016 when he broke his leg, he came back and you know, I thought he looked as good – if not better. And that interception he had against Houston, the pick six, mm-hmm. and that shootout they had, that was maybe one of his better plays. And that's, you know, later on in his career in what, his eighth season.
Right. I mean, what amazes me is just the range that he has, and not just the range, but the fearlessness that he's able to come up, make that big hit, make the hit that's going to knock some people out. And you just love watching him play. And that's the sad part about this day, that now we know that's not going to be back. I mean, it's going to be in Baltimore, I think, and you hope that he does a good job there. They'll get to play him once next year. But, you know, I think that you can see he was a very different individual in the sense that, you know, he is one that plays a great game. He's very intense. I mean, you know what it is sometimes trying to talk to him. It's not the easiest thing in the world. Yeah. During the week, after games, he's great. But I just love, you know, his ability to read coverages, make the right plays, and do all those things. Again, borderline Hall of Fame guy.
Yeah.
John, with him leaving, this kind of brings up a couple of different questions. Could Seattle have afforded to keep him now that we know the price and what he ended up signing for?
I guess they could. I mean, that's, you know, if they were indeed looking at Tyrell Williams, who ended up getting $11 million from the Oakland Raiders, I guess, you know, technically you can make anything work. That's
right.
The one thing with the cap. Because,
should they have?
I don't think so. I think that the relationship was so strained, and you're trying to clean up a lot of things in the locker room. And I think that, you know, it just, you know, there would be just a pressure there that I think would be unfair. And I think it was just time to move on. Same thing with like Richard Sherman.
And I can see that. I can also look at it and say this was a guy they decided not to give a third contract to, as opposed to, say, Cam Chancellor, who they extended, and that didn't really work out. Michael Bennett, whom they extended, and that didn't really work out in that he didn't stay with the team once the terms of the extension would have kicked in. They traded him at that point. With Earl, them not doing it, the next guy up in that conversation is going to be Bobby Wagner, who has 1 year left. Do you expect Seattle to look at giving him a third contract?
I think it's a possibility, but boy, what complicates it is C.J. Mosley. You know, him getting as an inside linebacker, yeah. $17.5 million, and you know, Bobby Wagner, much like Earl Thomas and Richard Sherman, and you can say Russell Wilson and that. I mean, these are and Marshawn Lynch. I mean, these are borderline Hall of Fame players, and maybe because he has so much range and, you know, he can do it. I mean, because he's still speedy. But again, it's dangerous. I mean, you look around the league and third contracts are hard to get. I mean, for example, I counted up, I think since 2008, there's been like maybe 31 contracts that have been third contracts. And I'm talking about with drafted players, you know, the ones that you draft and they stay with your team. I'm not talking about undrafted guys like that. But a lot of those are going to be quarterbacks. I mean, you can justify doing quarterbacks, but when you're talking, and you can justify offensive linemen because they tend to last a little bit longer. But when you start talking about the positions where your legs have to be involved and speed can be lost, then it's a little bit tougher to do. And so I think that's going to be a big debate. I mean, you noticed there's a guy in the street that was probably one of the best Green Bay Packers to play, Clay Matthews. You notice he didn't get a third contract.
Wow, that's right. He's out there, right?
He's out there, and it doesn't look like they're going to sign him.
Mm. Boy, Bobby's going to be lonely if KJ leaves.
Oh, I mean, I know.
He's the last one, the sort of leftover from...
I've been looking at it. I think it's better news the longer it goes. Not better news for KJ, because I know that he'd like a bigger contract. But the longer it goes without him signing, I think the more likely or more possible it is he could end up coming back, just because he won't have as lucrative of options as we thought he might.
Well, and that's the one thing. I mean, the idea is that you go out in free agency, just stay in touch. Remember, they did that with Richard Sherman, and then Richard was good enough to call back and said, "Here, well, here's the deal." And they said, "Nah, we can't do that." And I guess that's going to be the same. I mean, you want to have loyalty to your players, and this team has great loyalty to the players. And so, you know, but sometimes you've got to kind of move on.
Do you think Earl Thomas is going to be one of those players like Ed Reed that I feel like with the way he plays and his speed, and I have not seen it drop off, that he can play into his mid-30s? Your prediction? Because, you know, the broken leg, like, you know, it'd be one thing if you had...
Wasn't
like
a soft tissue injury.
Yeah, a worn-down knee or something like that, or something that's chronic. I mean, you break your leg, you know, it heals pretty quick, although he didn't do it, I guess, the right way. But, you know, you get it, you get the surgery, you get the plates, you get the screws. It seems like you should be good to go. It's not like he's ever had, other than the shoulder, I guess.
Mm-hmm. I doubt it. I don't know if he can go to 35, you know, because it's the way that he plays and the way that his body is. And what I mean by his body is that, okay, you look at Ed Reed. Ed was able to go to like 34, 35 years old,
yeah.
But he was more of a ball hawk. He was one that was going to intercept a pass, where Earl doesn't get many chances to intercept passes, not many at all. So his game is trying to go out there and run and make hits and try to make sure that everything's covered. And what you wonder about, and I give you a name of somebody that was around a shorter period of time but was a great player, was Bob Sanders. Remember Bob Sanders?
Yes.
At the Indianapolis Colts? I mean, you know, even they're a little bit different in their body structure, but the Earl and Bob are kind of done the same way. They're not the biggest guys, and of course, if you deliver the hits and you run around like that, I think it tends to wear down. So I think he probably has 2, maybe 3 years, but at 35, I think that's going to be a little bit too adventurous.
It's too bad for Bob Sanders. He was so good, but man, that dude could not stay healthy.
Oh no.
I mean, he, yeah, Earl, 28 interceptions. That's a pretty good amount.
It is good.
What did Ed Reed?
Ed is up at
65.
Yeah.
Ooh,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. He was Ed Reed, and he also returned punts, which was awesome. Yeah. Professor, we asked people to text in their favorite Earl Thomas memory.
Mm-hmm.
The most common one isn't an interception, but it's a hit he leveled.
Brady, play fake, has time, throws down the seam. Nice job by Cam Chancellor. Earl was there to unload on Gronkowski, but a great defensive job by Cam on the play. And Gronk looks like he just doesn't kind of want any part of the Seahawks secondary.
Earl broke his rib. He crushed him.
Well, and Cam really made a great play on that because he had outside leverage on him and was able to reach his arm in there, the long arm, tipped the ball away. But I think it was the hit that softened him up. And then remember, they went to him in the end zone at the end of the game. And, yeah, there was just a no call there. And I felt like some of that had to do with the fact that Earl softened him up.
Yeah, he gave him a huge blow. And I believe later that season, Gronk was out with a rib injury.
Well, I think it punctured his lung. It might, or
yeah, I remember that happening. John, let's get to the other big news, and this happened just last night. Odell Beckham being traded to Cleveland. I don't understand what the Giants are doing unless they're just absolutely tanking for 2019.
And that could be because, I mean, they are making some bad moves. Because when you throw that whole trade together, because they actually put out the waiver wire today and they had everything all together, they traded away, if you include Landon Collins, right, who they didn't franchise. They let walk at the age of 25, and he goes to the division rival Washington Redskins for $16 million a year, or $14 million a year. They gave away three Pro Bowl players, and in return, and again, you're talking about prime positions. You're talking about wide receiver. You're talking about defensive end and Olivier Vernon. Again, decent position in safety in Landon Collins. And in return, they get one player, Kevin Zeitler, Pro Bowl guard. Okay, that's okay, a Pro Bowl guard, a first-round pick, and a third-round pick. That's it. Three players for three players. And that, I'm including Landon Collins because I thought that was a big miss in letting him go. So how do you let three Pro Bowl players get out of your team, particularly when they're all under 30?
Hey, John, I think this is interesting for Teddy Bridgewater. So he's visiting the Dolphins, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's, and I think Danny brought this up, that maybe it's better for him to stay in New Orleans playing that offense when Drew Brees, you know, kind of wait that out. Whereas, you know, you go to Miami, you're probably going to get a chance to play right away, would you think, with Tannehill
there?
Oh,
yeah, well, I think they're going to cut Tannehill.
Okay.
I think what you can see is that, I mean, again, he was very content and he had agreed to re-sign with the Saints, and the Saints were delighted when that happened. But then today, in a surprising move, the Los Angeles Chargers ended up getting a quarterback, and that took one off the market. And so with that in mind, it's like, hey, why not? So, it now looks like the Miami job can be open. And so if you're Teddy Bridgewater, is it better to sit and be a backup and wait, or if you get a chance to go to the Dolphins? And so the fact he's going to the Dolphins, I think right now, tells you that he very well may just end up signing there and being the starting quarterback. I think what he was fearful of is going to the Dolphins knowing they're tanking the season and just having a losing record. But a chance to start is one to start, and if that's the case, sign a one-year deal and see where it's going to go.
So that would mean that he's kind of pulling a little bit of a, was it Barr, the linebacker in Minnesota, who thought, and the Jets thought they had him, and then he ended up returning to Minnesota because the Saints thought they had Teddy Bridgewater coming back, and now this afternoon he's visiting the Dolphins.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's very similar because, you know, and that's the great part about this free agency period now that you have the legal tampering part, because, I mean, you can check out and have a little bit more knowledge on your decisions, you know, because it's like, well, I don't know if I like what's going on with the Jets. And, you know, and I think part of that had to be, it's like, wait a second, you just paid C.J. Mosley $17.5 and you want me to go at $12 million? It's like, wait a second, I'm going to call back the Vikings and see what they want to do. And they took his number up to $13.5 to stay, and he was quite content about this. In the case of Bridgewater, it's like, all right, maybe I get a chance to start. Let's see if I can do that.
Okay, so you referenced the Chargers. They got Tyrod Taylor.
Tyrod Taylor signed, right.
Two-year deal. I really like Tyrod Taylor. I think he's a bargain. What do we know the terms of that?
We do not yet. Hasn't come out. Again, these things are coming so fast and furious that trying to keep up on it's not the easiest thing to do, but that's what we try to do.
And we still don't know what J.R. Sweezy.
But I'll tell you what, I just found out. Remember, we were talking at 11, and I thought that James Carpenter got $7 million. Well, it turned out he got 5.25.
Oh.
So that tells me this probably between 4.5 and 5.25, probably what ended up going to J.R. Sweezy in Arizona. Now, again, that puts you eligible for a sixth round compensatory, and now that they've lost six guys, they were able to get Jason Myers back, that's a net minus five as far as players lost, and so they're right now eligible for probably a 3, a 4, and 2 sixes, and maybe as rich as a fifth and a sixth.
Well, wouldn't that still, so I mean, if it's 4.5-5 million for J.R. Sweezy, he was making 1.5. A $3.5 million raise for him, I would be surprised. And look, I don't know what their numbers, their rules are, all that stuff. But just from the outside, it just seems like J.R. Sweezy, you know, based on what we saw Roger Saffold get, he's younger than that. I would be surprised if it was like $5 million.
I think John's right. I think it is going to be right in that range of $4.5 to $5.25, somewhere in there, like $9 to $11 million.
Yeah, it's not going to be the $11 million that went to Roger Saffold. That's because that's a little bit rich. He's a former first round pick, and that one's not going to happen. But no, I think it's going to probably be $4.5 to $5.25, which again for him that's a good deal.
It is a good deal. It also makes me wonder because the Seahawks. They have a number of strengths over the past 8 years under John Schneider and Pete Carroll. I would identify one of their weaknesses as they underestimated the value of veteran offensive linemen. They did it when they traded Max Unger. They did it to a certain extent when they let guys like Breno Giacomini, James Carpenter, other players, they let Russell Okung, they let those guys leave as free agents at the time saying, hey, let somebody else pay them. We'll be able to find suitable replacements. They didn't find suitable replacements. Mm-hmm. They struggled. We ended up with Jamarcus Webb and some of those other things. And I would identify, and that's my concern and why I wish they had paid what it took to keep Sweezy, because you know Sweezy fits here. Mm-hmm. And it's not that exorbitant of a price. Even if it is $4.5 to $5 million a year for 2 years, he was such a huge addition to him. And we've seen what happens when they let guys leave is that they're not always able to replace them in the draft or finding the bargains in free agency.
And, I mean, when they had Justin Britt as the senior member of the team as on the offensive line, I mean, John Schneider admitted it. He said that we got too young. Pete Carroll admitted it. And so they did admit that mistake, but also understand that this is a salary cap. And during the time that they were doing that, they had 7 Pro Bowl core players on defense that are all being paid or getting to be paid, and they're all going to be paid at the top of their positions. And so you have to make some sacrifices. Now, again, they were able to get through, in the first 4 years of Russell Wilson's contract, not having to pay a quarterback. That helped them. It gave them the ability to be aggressive. But also, you have to make some sacrifices. And if you're paying wide receivers, you're paying a tight end $10 million a year, something sacrificed, and they sacrificed maybe a little bit too much. But, that's the game that you have to play. And every team has to play that.
Well, and I think it's interesting that, coaches and GMs are not immune from having their own little biases. That was the offensive line coach.
Tom Cable.
You can get a guard on the
Alex
side
Gibbs.
Of the road.
Alex Gibbs.
Give me a tackle, And so didn't necessarily value, not that he didn't value him, but I feel like he thought he could turn somebody into a guard. Chuck Knox was always, had his problem with rookies. For every game you have a rookie start, you're going to lose a game. There's all of those little things that go on there. But, obviously they had their limit for JR. We'll see. When will we get to see the details of that?
I'm going to probably by tomorrow. Again, everybody's collecting these things, and the Players Association and others start to get it out. So I would say by tomorrow we'll have it.
I'll say this. I've got a nomination for worst free agent contract so far, John.
CJ Mosley?
No, because Mosley's actually a good player. LaMarcus Joyner. I don't think he's any good. And Oakland gave him a boatload of money after he was franchise tagged by the Rams.
$10.5 million a year, yeah.
I do not
get how that guy gets that much money.
Yeah, like that's a fair one, but I think there's one that even tops that.
Who's that?
Trent Brown.
Oh, you're right.
$16.5 million, and there's the thought that he may not even play left tackle. They may keep Colton Miller at left tackle and put him over at right tackle. And Juwan James went to Denver for $11 million, and that's the highest paid right tackle. If you have Trent Brown at right tackle at 16.5, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, I would
Where
say.
Where did Joyner go, LaMarcus Joyner?
He went to the Raiders.
Oh, that's right.
It was the same team that signed Trenton Brown.
If you would have told me that, especially during the NFC Championship game, their safeties were a liability. I know you like their corners, John, the Rams,
yeah,
but
I do.
Oh my gosh. Joyner, he was the one that tried to go up and catch that interception like it was a punt.
Yeah, it was Willie Mays style.
I can't believe that. That's brutal.
I will say this, though. If Tom Cable's moving him away from left tackle, you know why that is, John. Because he likes to make guys uncomfortable.
Uh-huh.
It's a big thing. He likes to make guys uncomfortable, despite the fact that making guys uncomfortable recently has seemed to make them into worse players.
Well, I know in the last 2 years he certainly made Russell Wilson uncomfortable.
Yes, because he kept getting bludgeoned.
Hey, John, can you do a compensatory picks for dummies? Just a quick little, and I know it's a big sort of formula that goes into it. But
do you know why he has to ask you this? John,
why is that?
Because he asked me earlier and my explanation was unacceptable.
Oh, okay.
Well, you had the right. You were on the right. It has to do with money. It has to. Well, lots that you do is unacceptable, Danny. But, you know, how to just in a really quick sort of little way of explaining it. How do they arrive at these companies?
Okay, so basically, it's the money that you get, and it kind of goes right down the line. This is not 100% the way they do it, because right. they actually have other adjustments. But, you know, like, for example, $22 million a year went to Nick Foles. That's going to be the highest compensatory pick, and it's going to be a third rounder. And then what they do is that they'll go at a certain percentage of the salaries of where the guys are, where there's going to be a break-off, what round it gets. So right now, there's about 9 or 10 players making more than $10 million moving to different teams. And that's going to be a third round compensatory. Now, again, performance, you know, whether you get on the injured reserve list for a long period of time, that could downgrade you as far as what you end up getting the next year.
Okay. If so it's the player's performance.
No, it's money. 90% of it's money.
Okay.
And then it's a little bit performance and all that. And so what happens is for each player that you lose, and you can lose up to 4 more than you sign, then you can get a compensatory pick. So with that in mind, Earl getting 13.75, that's going to be a third-round compensatory pick. You know, then the next move is going to be $9 million for Justin Coleman. That's going to be a fourth-round compensatory pick. If J.R. Sweezy gets 5, that might be a fifth-rounder, and then Mike Davis and all the other guys, that's 6 rounders.
Okay.
So you get a, you know, it'll be a 3, 4, 5, and 6, or a 3, 4, 6, and 6 right now, as long as they don't sign more players than, you know, again, if you have a net loss of 3, then you only get 3, so you lose a 6th round pick, and it may be worth it if you can get a good, let's put it this way. Would you rather have Bruce Irvin at $4 million, or would you rather have the 6th round compensatory if you get into that pinch? You take Irvin.
Right.
You think Bruce Irvin, we haven't heard much from him. Do you think he's a candidate? I've kind of written him off after he didn't choose to go to the Seahawks last season after being released.
This is the guy that tweeted how he wanted to be on the side of Frank Clark?
Yeah, I know, but he kind of did that the last time, too, where he kind of flirted with him, and I think he might be playing with our emotions, John. I feel like I've been burnt before by this.
But also, what if he didn't like what he saw in Atlanta?
Well, that's possible.
And what if Atlanta doesn't want him back?
Huh? Could be.
That's maybe. A possibility.
Yeah, save you money buying McDonald's. MacDonald's, as they call it.
Giving him some McDonald's.
But, I mean, let's put it this way. I mean, it was a bad Monday for the Seahawks, or a bad Tuesday with the fact that they end up losing 5 guys, and, you know, today they lose their 6. But now it's starting to bounce back a little bit because, you know, they were able to get the answer to their kicking situation. They now have an option if he's not in jail at weak side linebacker. And so now we'll see what other moves they can make.
Free Michael Kendricks! John, thank you very much.
Thank you.
If you missed any of today's Cold Hard Facts, brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light, Washington's most refreshing beer, download the podcast, 710sports.com.
What?
No comment?
Free Michael Kendricks.
Danny cracking Danny up is my favorite.
And he's looking at me like, okay, I have to give you a courtesy laugh for that. No, I'm with you on it. You and I feel the same. It's too bad.
Free
Jim's
Michael
not here.
Kendricks.
Yeah.
It is too bad.
I don't
Jim's
think he's doing
here.
Any time.
Is it really too bad Jim's not here? Yes, it's too bad Jim's not here. We hope he gets well soon. We're going to run you through the free agent updates and, well, why you shouldn't be surprised at what Seattle's doing. That's next.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio,
it's Danny, Dave, and Moore. Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
Happy Hour brought to you by Heritage Distilling Company, makers of BSB Brown Sugar Bourbon. Seahawks bringing back Jason Myers, the kicker they cut last year. They've added him in free agency. They're bringing back Michael Kendricks, who was good in the few games he played when he wasn't serving a suspension or injured, now hoping he's available for the start of the season. But they've lost Earl Thomas, which is not a surprise, and still I find it a little bit deflating today. I just feel a little bit disappointed, and probably it's because I'm going to miss the little sucker. He was a really fun player to watch, and he was a really unique personality. Here is Earl Thomas being asked by Greg Bell of the Tacoma News Tribune, what would you be doing if you weren't playing football?
What would you be doing if you weren't playing football?
I'll be playing football.
That's Earl.
Yeah, what would it be? What would you do? How about Dragon Time? That was one of the things he offered up.
It's Dragon Time, man. It's Dragon Time right now. You know, really excited about getting back on the field. But my main focus is just, you know, power, just a sound mind, just going out there and just let love. You know, football is what I love. I'm excited to go out there and do it today.
Dragon Time? Is that what you said?
Yeah, it's Dragon Time.
So can you help me out? I'm not following.
That's why I don't talk when I'm out there. I'm burning inside.
Oh, the
fuel. So it's like
inside.
A dragon, like a fire-breathing dragon. Not that you're tired or slow.
I don't know what that means, but I just know what I know.
I know what I know. Yeah, that's what made him lovable, I think. You know, and there's, you know, we talk about the folk hero type of player, Deho Lee being that way. You think maybe Vogelbach can be that way. You know, he's kind of folk hero status just because he's hard to understand. You don't really know. You don't hear from him that much. And when you do, you're kind of confused. I remember him talking about how everything in his life was about football and how, and look, that's what you want, especially with the money. And again, I'll repeat, you know, what we said at the opening is that, look, it may sound like he's a guy that's really into the material part of money. And as you put it, Danny, I don't think it's what that money can get for him materialistically. I think it has to do with respect. And, you know, and look, that's what money is. It's an indication of a job well done. And I think that that's kind of what he wants. But the thing, and this is the reason why you have to have guys like that, is because the money right now is so ridiculous. And it's such a huge amount of money. You know, Earl's going to make over, if he plays out this contract, he'll have made close to like $110 million. You know, now that's the gross amount, but still, that is so much money that you can pretty much tell everybody in the world to bleep off.
That's correct. And you can get as many weddings in full crown and cape
right. As
you would like. You can have that be an annual event.
You can do whatever you want, basically.
You could probably buy your own castle. Would you buy a castle if you had that much money? It'd be so fun to have a castle.
That would be an indication that you've lost your mind. You know?
Load it with alligators and a moat.
Right.
Well, you talked about his commitment to football, and this is something that he had said a few years ago, which stood out to a lot of people.
No, you know, I'm married to football, so when you're married to a person, you take your vows and you treat it right. It's a privilege to be out here. And I'm not going to follow the trends of the crowd. That's not me. That's not my style.
Let me ask you this, Dave, because we've seen Seattle sign what's called a third contract to a player that's approaching or at 30 with Marshawn Lynch, Cam Chancellor, Michael Bennett. Those are three prime examples, none of whom played a down for the Seahawks into the extended years of the contract, essentially the years that were added. And in Marshawn's case, I think that it was understood that he might walk away, that might be the case. In Cam's case, it was because of an injury. And in Bennett's case, it was largely because they decided that they were better off moving on and took a fifth-round pick and had him leave. Earl now doesn't get it. Is this a case-by-case basis, or do you think this is a new policy by the team that, hey, we're probably not giving out third contracts?
I think it's an old policy that they've just stuck to, and that's one of those where you can't sit there and go, well, it's Earl, and he's different, you know, because all of those guys, you could say, make an argument that they're Hall of Fame worthy. Marshawn Lynch is kind of on the cusp, according to Clayton, you know, and what, 10,000 yards. You know, you look at what Cam Chancellor kind of falls into the category of Kenny Easley, where, you know, maybe not the longevity, but you see the numbers there. And if this is extended out, you know, another 3 or 4 years, Kenny Easley and Cam Chancellor are in the Hall of Fame. You know, Bennett, you know, we'll see how that ends for him, but you can't just all of a sudden change that. I think it's been something that they've stuck to. You ever see The Fugitive?
Yes.
Remember Tommy Lee Jones when he's like, is this your good ear? Get it real close here. I don't bargain, you know, and that's what the Seahawks, they don't do third contracts. That's just not what they do. And I think they stick to that no matter what. And, you know, it just hasn't worked. And, you know, that's the deal, I think, going forward. Now, is it new? Well, I mean, when's the last time they did it?
Last one would have been Bennett. I think it would have been
Bennett or Cam.
Bennett or Cam, yeah. One of the two.
So, you know, look, it just hasn't worked. You know, there's always room for, well, this is an exception. You know, what if it's Russell Wilson?
The quarterbacks are a different conversation.
Doesn't matter. Maybe an offensive lineman, you know, offensive lineman because of the longevity they have. So, but it just doesn't work for them. And they're all about getting younger. And that's good news for the Seahawks and Seahawk fans because they're good at it, man. I think this draft from last year, the 2017-18 draft, I think is going to prove to be one that's up there with the 2012 draft.
It is the happy hour. It's brought to you by Heritage Distilling, makers of BSB, Brown Sugar Bourbon. I think Earl Thomas is the best player from this Super Bowl winning franchise. That the 2012 to 2015, say, that window where this was the prime of those guys that made that run, Sherm and Cam and all of those guys, I thought Earl was the best player. Russell was the most important because he's the quarterback. And I certainly loved how Marshawn played, and I thought that he embodied the toughness. But I thought if you were going to rank the guy who was best at his position, that Earl was the one that you would make, that Earl was the best safety in the league during that stretch of time.
Yeah. I go Richard Sherman, and I think I'm a little bit, you know, slanted because the fact that he was a fifth rounder. Earl, you know, I always kind of feel like, well, that's what you're supposed to do when you're the number 10 pick in the draft. Was it 10?
14.
14, yeah. So, and they got Okung that same year. You're supposed to be that good. And whereas with Richard Sherman, you know, he just came up with so many plays. And for him to have, I think he has pretty close to the same number of interceptions as Earl, and he's not playing in the middle of the field. And there was a lot of times where they just would not throw at Richard Sherman. So to me, I think he's was probably the best player. But, you know, look, that's debatable. Earl Thomas, you know, you could say during that time, Bobby Wagner, you know, there's lots of good players that could fall into that category, but it was just time for him to be gone. And I think for the most part, there's a few people that are saying, you know, get rid of him, nasty words for Earl on the text toy, maybe a couple out of every, 15 or 20 that say that they're just done with that. They're tired of that. They want to move on and get younger.
Does anybody think they should have kept him? We see the price now, and it's easy to apply a rearview mirror and say, hey, they should have met that price a year ago. And we don't know if the contract he got from Baltimore would have satisfied him here in Seattle. Are there people out there that think that the Seahawks should have kept him? We'll keep this conversation going, but coming up next, we're going to sweep the dial, and that includes Wade and his bestie, Marco Gonzalez, as we sweep the dial next.
Sweeping the dial. Streaming everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app and 710sports.com.
Does this face make me look fat? Same. Always fat? Always fat. Go ahead.
Hey, this face is fat.
Yes,
fat face, yes.
Always fat. Always fat. At least he's honest.
Wade LeBlanc and Marco Gonzalez. They're going to be kind of the personality of this pitching staff. Are they talking to Yusei Kikuchi there? Trying to ask him if they have a fat face?
Oh.
Fat face?
It's kind of funny because they're like, 8 years apart? Wade's 34. He's got a cute little wife and kids and little family going. And Marco's, 26, I think, and the young guy. It's kind of an interesting little odd couple there. Did they get your T-shirts?
I know that Wade did.
We
haven't heard from Marco yet. I believe D. Gordon also had one that Jessamine had made, the Not On Our Table T-shirts.
Yes, that was my design. Thank you very much. Those who are interested, I have the design saved.
Yes, we're going to be starting a campaign.
Okay.
Not On Our Table.
Can you imagine if this takes off and it becomes a thing for, Marco Gonzalez? Instead of the King's Court, you have the Not On Our Table.
The
court.
Table setters.
With the poop emoji.
Yeah, with
the table setters. That's what we're going
to
be.
And having to explain that on national TV, if there's all these people in two sections.
It's just simply they're not going to come and desecrate our table.
Mm-hmm.
That's all it is. We're not standing for table desecration anymore by our fair feathered friends to the north.
Back this way, buddy. Drop it in the hole.
Well, that's his third, your third shot.
Drop it in the hole. Callaway, is that the right one, Mary? Wish I had a better zoom in the camera. Oh, yeah!
Oh, in.
It's in! Hole in one! Thank you.
An eagle knocked a ball into the hole for a British Columbia golfer. So I guess the eagle got him an eagle?
Yeah, it's a par three.
Good for him.
Yeah. You know, the question Jess has here is animal interferences. What do you always think of?
Turtle.
What about it?
I think it lands on a turtle shell, and the turtle wades very, very slowly all the way up to the green, at which point it sneezes, and the ball rolls off the tortoise's shell and into the hole.
I'm talking about real-life situations, Danny.
That could happen.
No, it couldn't. What about Randy Johnson splattering that bird? And I know everybody's like, oh, you know, and he felt bad. I'm like, it's just a bird. But that was unbelievable, that intersection in time, that he happened to be throwing his fastball. What are the chances?
It seems
that
like
was unbelievable.
Honestly, it seems like it should happen more often. The number of pitches that are thrown, the reckless abandon with which some birds swoop around. I'm surprised it doesn't happen on a daily basis that a bird gets brained by a baseball.
That's a one in a billion chance.
There's 300 pitches that are thrown in every baseball game. There's 15 baseball games per day.
How many birds are there flying in between
Millions.
Home plate and pitching,
well, have you ever
pitching
seen,
mound?
Have you ever seen the Oakland Coliseum after?
Yeah.
Like, as you get toward the end, and it's this disgusting swarm of seagulls.
Right. Oh, scavengers.
Wow. Just nasty.
Yeah. That one time I threw my golf club, and it hit a bird and killed it.
Really?
Yeah.
You savage.
Yeah, and I said that I got a par and a birdie on that hole. Get it?
I do get it. I respect that joke.
Yeah, and it was, I thought you would. And, well, I won't tell the rest of the details of it, but I wasn't even trying. I was mad because I missed a birdie putt, so I threw my putter. See the irony in this? And it hit a birdie.
That's correct. You got your birdie one way or another.
Yeah.
Missed one birdie, got another bird.
It wasn't on purpose, so don't text in and say that I'm a bird killer.
One bird on the green is worth one in the bush.
Show it to me and prove that to me before I'm going to label you a Super Bowl contender. You ain't made the playoffs. I mean, when's the last time they made the playoffs? The last time the Cleveland Browns made the playoffs was 2002. It's been 17 years.
They've had like 17 quarterbacks.
And without making the postseason, I'm supposed to look at you and think that you're a Super Bowl contender? Hell no. Get to the playoffs first.
I want to say this, that I genuinely think Stephen A. Smith is entertaining. And he's actually a pretty nice guy. Steve, if you met him in the press rooms when he was covering the NBA, he's a pretty nice guy.
Have you been around him?
Yes.
Yeah.
He's a nice guy. Why do I care what he thinks about the NFL? And I say this with sort of all due disrespect. This is a guy that mistook what talked about Hunter Henry playing for the Chargers, as well as Derek Thomas. No, it wasn't Derek Thomas. It was the Derek Johnson. The other linebacker that was there that's no longer in the league. And earlier this week, referred to one of the Washington's punters as a quarterback candidate. Why would I care what he has to decide the credit he's going to give to the Cleveland Browns?
Well, it's the same reason you would listen to Skip Bayless or any other clown that screams and yells on TV. Some might categorize us that way, by the way. Also, I'm with him on this one. Because every year, everybody gets loaded up on, you know, like the sexy pick, you know. The 49ers, everybody thought the Niners last year were going to have a better record than the Seahawks. And they did beat them and everything. But still, you know, I feel like just because these things are happening in one year, everybody's going from, oh, the Browns stink, they're a disaster, to, oh, they're going to the Super Bowl. So I don't think they're Super Bowl contenders either.
I would fade the Browns. I am betting against the Browns. In fact, I think that you could make a really good habit of finding whichever team is projected to make the great leap forward by everyone and bet against that team. But it's not because of anything Stephen A. Smith had to say.
What is this fading term that we have now?
It's a betting term. If you fade someone.
You're a gambler now? You fancy yourself a gambler? Just because Jim's not here, you got to pick up the slack?
No, I think I have kind of fallen in love with the term. Like, I'm going to fade them. I'm going to bet against them.
Are you throwing shade at them?
No. I don't know what that is because I that's something the young kids tend to say.
Kids like C-Raj. You say that, C-Raj?
I've said it a couple of times, yeah.
Throw shade. Did you throw shade at Mike Davis?
Oh, yeah. I did a couple days ago on Twitter when it was announced he was going to Chicago.
Yeah.
I said, let me find the tweet here. It says, oh, some advice to any evening Chicago radio hosts. Mike Davis really likes hearing his name get mentioned.
Oh, that was mean.
It's truthful. How is it mean if it's truthful?
Well, you should have taken credit for him getting that contract because you put a chip on his shoulder.
I did.
You motivated him.
Exactly. Yeah.
The 509 has come up with the proper term for what Dave Wyman is. Dave is a birderer.
Birderer?
He is a birderer.
That's funny.
He's convicted of first-degree birdery. It's Danny David Moore.
509.
How do you feel about Earl Thomas? What are your feelings? We're going to open up the phone lines and take your texts about Earl Thomas's departure. That's next.